Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Village Board meeting for Tuesday, October 4th. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we will call our meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genright.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Green is excused. Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Trustee Deutsch.
Here.
Item number two, do I have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Trustee Sampson, do I have a second? Trustee Harris, any discussion? We have a motion to adopt the agenda as presented and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. The first announcement is beginning November 1st, there is no overnight parking from November 1st through March 31st on the streets of Alloway from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. More information on that on the website. Second announcement, trick-or-treating is going to take place on October 31st from 4 to 7 in the village. Announcement number 3C, fall cleanup begins on October 17th and will go through November 17th. Weather permitting, the fall cleanup, which is the collection of leaves and yard waste, is scheduled from October 17th to November 17th. The last day to put yard waste and leaves out to the curb for pickup is November 13th. Visit the Village of Alloway website for any updates and more detailed information on what you can put out during that time. Announcement 3D, notice of fall general elections. The fall general election is going to take place on November 8th. We will be voting for the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, the state treasurer, our U.S. senator, or one of our U.S. senators, Congress representative, and our state representative, as well as at the county level, we will have the sheriff and the clerk of the court elections. An important election, get out and vote, and there's information on absentee voting on our website. Item number 3E, Fire Prevention Week is October 9th through 15th. Practice your home fire drill during these times with occupants twice a year. Make sure your home has working smoke alarms. Teach children how to escape in case you can't help them. Close doors behind you as you leave. And once you get outside, stay outside. There's more information at www.nfpa.org. Item 3F, Prescription Drug Take-Back Day is Saturday, October 9th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Village Hall. Instructions for what you can bring, what you cannot bring, can be found on our website. And 3G, Green Bay Metro Fire Department Gifts for Teens Parade, an annual event, will be held on December 8th, 2022, from 5:30 to 7:30. They will go around the village, and they'll be on, looks like East River, Longview, Delahut, and something on the north end. There will be more information, I'm sure, as we get closer to that time frame. It's a great opportunity to help our community. Any other announcements from my fellow board members? Any other announcements from staff? Any other announcements from staff? Hearing none, we will move on to item number 4, public comment. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who is interested in speaking on something that is not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, is there anyone in the audience who's interested in speaking on any topic that's on our agenda, just so I can be prepared. Hearing none, we will close the public comment and move on to item number 5, presentation regarding the review of the 2023 new water budget.
Thank you. Here tonight with us is New Water. Nathan Gwall, Director of Technical Services, will be providing a presentation on next year's budget. Tom Sigmund, Executive Director, thank you, will be available to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to speak again with the Village Board. And
could you give us your name?
Sure. Nathan Qualls, Q-U-A-L-L-S. I'm Director of Technical Services with New Water.
Thank you, Nathan.
Yeah, so appreciate the opportunity. Again, I'll present. Tom's available for questions as well. Feel free to stop anytime you have questions. Talk a little bit about 2023 draft budget, some update on our facility plan projects. The last time we were all together was talking about that facility plan we're working on, and then also some inflow and infiltration program elements that we've been working with a stakeholder advisory group on getting developed for our region, our entire service area. So that's what we'll cover today. And, we'll just go ahead and get started.
Great.
So we like to start with the reason why New Water shows up each day, our mission, our vision around protecting our most valuable resource, water. So we're going to start on the expense side of our draft budget. You can see a comparison between the 2022 and 2023 budget. We are looking at total expenses of 7.7% increase. You can see operations and maintenance budget increase at 8.9%, and debt service and annual capital about 6.3%. Roughly 50% between those two major categories. O&M slightly ahead there with 54% of our overall budget. Next slide. So on that O&M side, we've been experiencing a number of inflationary pressures, as well as some other changes in increased chemical usage and electrical usage and such. So wanted to provide some of those that have been a bit unusual for us in developing the 23 budget. So the first two line items, sodium hypochlorite, sodium bisulfite, are disinfection chemicals. We are required to seasonally disinfect that wastewater, and this is a category that is driven not only by unit cost, just the chemical prices are going up quite a bit, but also our usage. We have a new permit that went into effect this year, and in order to meet those new permit requirements, we're having to add more chemicals, so it's kind of being driven by both usage as well as unit costs. Ferric chloride, a chemical used for odor control as well as for phosphorus removal to meet permit, that's a unit cost increase. We're not seeing increased usage, but just that cost from our chemical provider is going up 30%. Diesel fuel, purchased electricity, we're seeing both usage and price increasing for those in particular around purchased electricity. We generate about 40% of our own electricity from the waste itself, and just evaluating how much we produce versus how much we need to purchase from the utility, we're seeing increases on the purchase side. Ash disposal, which is the end use of all the solid product from wastewater services, we're seeing cost driven around the labor cost and the time and effort it takes to dispose of that, as well as the amount of material. As we process more material, we need to dispose of that. Market adjustment for our wages is at plus 4%. We run a market-based pay structure this year for the 2023 budget. We did a full survey. We do that full survey of multiple utilities and take a look at across private and public sector. We did that full survey this year. That's resulting in an increase of 4% market adjustment for all pay grades in the organization. Health insurance is at a 5.2% increase, and then plant maintenance and repairs at plus 18%. We are seeing increased demands from maintaining and operating this aging infrastructure. We have a number of projects that will replace those assets, but we are having to budget additional repair costs in order to maintain them over the next few years until we can get them replaced. Next slide. Taking a look at that long-term capital investment plan, you can see quite an increase, 24 through 29. We envision that will flatten out a bit. Taking a look at supply chain issues, contractor availability, as well as prices of projects. This is something we evaluate each and every year. We reprioritize as necessary, but we're envisioning that will flatten a bit there. But the continued need for investing in these facilities is significant. Go to the next slide, Brad. So that was on the expense side, both O&M and capital, and of course looking at how we obtain our revenues. You can see here the breakdown on these broad categories. The largest source of our revenue is from municipal user fees, second to that being the mill charges. And you can see the result of that 7.7% expense increase, of course, is a total revenue increase of 7.7%. And municipal fees, we are seeing an increase of 4.7%. In this case, for the Village of Alloway, that comes to about a 3% municipal user fee over 2022. We're seeing a lot of variability from our mill dischargers. That's swinging flows and loads to our facilities quite a bit, and seeing quite a bit of fluctuation. And what we're seeing here with the mill charges going up significantly is centered around our total suspended solids loading to the facility. So they are providing significantly more loads to us, which shifts some of that revenue then more to the industries and a bit away from the municipalities. So doing a municipal rate comparison, this gets awfully complicated. I first want to note down at the bottom, we have a fixed capital charge, which we then take to try to look across year to year. We take that and re-roll that back up into the parameter rates to get a year-to-year look at the impact to the municipalities. And you can see volume staying relatively flat, BOD going up slightly, but suspended solids and phosphorus going up for the municipal for the municipality's rate itself. So seeing the capital fixed charge increasing 5.7%, that's kind of proportional to the amount of capital that we are spending. These aren't the rates that we would then actually charge the municipalities, because this shows the fixed rate kind of being rolled back up through those. So that's just one clarification. You can't compare these particular municipal rates to a bill, you know, that would show up to the village. Is trying to just blend that fixed charge back up in to do that comparison. Right, next slide. So on the liquids facilities plan, and we can come back to questions on the budget. Just going to kind of move into this. On our liquids facility plan, we have submitted that to the DNR. That is under review, and we're hoping to see an approval on that later this year. The first two projects coming out of that liquids facility plan are expected to start construction in 2023, both at our Green Bay facility, some sludge thickening improvements, and then a significant rehabilitation project on both primary and secondary clarifiers at the Green Bay facility. And then we're also beginning design on that third project at the DePere facility, influent pumping and headworks improvements. We'll see that get underway shortly, with design carrying through 2023. there's a lot of uncertainty around projects and execution over the next couple of years, largely driven by inflation, contractor availability, supply chain, like I mentioned earlier. So we're going to continue to evaluate those throughout the design process and adapt as necessary. So we've been working with stakeholder advisory group made up of a number of our municipal customers. Sean has been helping us out with that program, and we just experienced too much wet weather flow. So when it rains, that wastewater flow to the treatment plants peaks, and we have trouble processing all of that wastewater, and we are in the process of developing a program which helps to manage that. And we've identified five key elements of that program, looking at educational assistance, you know, offering outreach education to homeowners, because private property is a significant contributor to that issue, as well as collaborating with our municipal customers, the DPWs, to help evaluate their programs and make plans for the future. Technical assistance, we can assist with flow monitoring and helping our customers understand their systems, providing ordinance language examples, those kinds of things to help manage the issue as well. A financial assistance element, how much will New Water be funding the work associated with either private property or funding flow monitoring programs and things of the like. So that's an important aspect for us to work through. Flow limits, setting those limits, identifying what peak levels are acceptable, what's unacceptable, and then working towards compliance, ensuring that those flow limits are not exceeded by our municipalities. So that's, at a high level, the program elements that we think are critical to success of managing that wet weather problem. So next steps on the budget will be ongoing customer meetings. We appreciate the invite. We hope this will continue, and other customers will take us up on the discussion. We will be having a budget hearing and adoption for the budget at the December 7th meeting, and then we'll notify the customers of that final budget adoption through our normal means, working with Sean and Brad. So I'll stop there and see if there's any questions from the board.
And quickly, where is the budget hearing being held?
That's at our New Water offices, Quincy Street in Green Bay. Likely a hybrid meeting, so we'll have a Zoom link available for those who want to attend as well.
And that's open to the public, right?
Yes, that's right.
It'd be good to get that out. If it's a hybrid, to be able to publicize that so that people can attend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will people who attend virtually be able to make comment or give comment?
Yeah, during a public hearing for the budget, we have a public comment period.
And they'll be able to do so if they're virtual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any questions?
Sure.
Justin Sampson.
I have a question kind of at a macro level, and I appreciate that some of the materials and chemical costs are going up, but the thing we've talked about, and matter of fact had a public hearing here a few months ago, was about the massive retooling of the plant, you know, the main treatment plant.
Yes.
Which is a $300 million or $400 million, maybe $500 million, half a billion dollars. And one of the things that I generally recall being mentioned is maybe that doesn't have to go all on the ratepayers, that maybe you could tap some reserves to buy any rate increase down. But I think I saw the slide where it talked about the tapping the reserves. It was in the neighborhood of 1.5 or 1.6 million, but it was only $10,000 more than last year. And am I reading that correctly? And second, is there a reason why you decided not to tap the reserves more for this first year?
Sure, absolutely. So we've identified 25 million or so in our plant capital reserve that we will deplete as we execute on this facility plan. We envision using that over a 10-year period of time. The facility plan was 240 to 310, kind of the cost range envisioned over the next 20 years. And we feel that as we saw that increase in the capital, coming in the future years, that's when we're going to need that reserve the most. And so we would tap into that plant capital reserve at that time. The one that you see referenced in the revenue chart, reserve transfers, it was 1.4 to 1.47 million. That, Tom, if I'm not mistaken, is our interceptor cost recovery reserve. And we use that reserve to offset some interceptor project debt. So that particular reserve is focused on the interceptors itself. It's not this plant capital reserve that we intend to use.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope I answered the other
question. Yes. So what we looked at for...
Tom, could you come up to the mic?
Yes, I'm sorry. What we looked at for 2023 was we were able to do about a 4.7% increase in revenues needed from the municipal customers. Our projection was somewhere between 5.5 to 7%. So we're able to stay below that 5.5%. So we're basically saving some of those reserves for when we know it's in the coming years.
Understood. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So this year's 23 million or whatever it is, that appears to double next year on your bar chart that you just had. Would you then figure that, the alloy 3% increase this year, could we just assume it's going to be twice that next year?
So we'll be targeting, again, that 5.5 to 7% from municipalities as kind of general increase. What's shown in 2023 to 2024 is the capital expenditures, so the cost of the projects, which okay. we'll take on that 20-year debt to do that. So it won't that won't directly be proportional to.
Is there any old debt coming off at that point, or is it just?
Yeah, we have. I don't have the full list of our loans, but about each year we have some of those historic loans coming off. The largest of which comes off around 2034, I believe, is kind of the next really big significant drop of that capital.
Okay. Thanks.
Matthew?
Yep. I had a couple questions about the budget, but before I forget, I have a couple of general questions about the capital charge study that you guys sent over. High level, I know you won't know, the minutiae off the top of your head, but sure. I had a couple questions about that if we could.
Yeah.
With regard to the budget, my concern is the O&M expenses in that I looked back just so it wasn't a 1 or 2, 3 year trend. I looked all the way back to the audited results of 2016, and it's been going up pretty steadily. And when I think about our budget process and where we've been at and trying to keep costs at the total amount at the end of the budget about the same. I'm not seeing that over time with this, and it has my attention. If we go just 16 to 17, 5.2%, 17 to 18, 6.1%, 7 or 18 to 19, 6.6%. We've gone up 35 some percent in the last 7 years, and this year's 9%. And then if we look at the salary and benefits being about half of the OOM expenses, and if we're going up 9%, salary and benefits are about a little over 4%. So that tells me that everything else in O&M from 22 to 23 is going up 13, 14%. That just seems, it gets my attention. And I don't know how we can focus in on that, get a little more attention on it, but that just, it seems like a high amount. The other thing that I'm seeing is if you go back to 2016 compared to now, the percentage that O&M is of the total, it's continuing to creep up. Back in 2016, it was 52%. We're now at 54.4. It's just a gradual amount, but again, it's taking more and more of the overall cost. Again, it's got my attention. I don't know how we can focus in more on it, but those are the things that I was hoping to get a better handle on.
Yeah, certainly the one slide kind of showing some of those chemical costs and power costs and those kinds of things are those. That was the reason for this, right? Some of those costs are, coming from those vendors, quite higher than anticipated. And with regards to the split between O&M and capital, we were anticipating that capital would grow to be a stronger share of that. And I think with our proposed capital plan, we'll see that start to take place. The length of the time for these projects to execute and take, it's going to take a little bit of time for that to outstrip O&M, but it likely will. I don't know if we've done any firm forecast on where that percentage will go, but just kind of looking at the dollars to be spent on that infrastructure, we see that likely to happen.
Okay. We'll go back and take a look. And a couple of the things when you look at O&M costs is some of it is due to just the unit cost of things, the price of gasoline, the price of electricity going up, and we use the same amount. And then there's also an element of we may get more pounds or more gallons that we have to treat, which means we need more of the chemicals and the power. And so some of the things that have happened over the years, and it's kind of been stop and start, is we brought on Green Bay Packaging. While they are pre-treating their waste and we're only treating 85%, that went from zero up to a loading, and that happened a couple of years ago. A couple of our other industries, we are heavily dependent on fluctuations in some of our significant industries in this community that typically pre-treat their waste, so they might knock their load down from 100% down to 15%, we treat the 15%, but we've seen some disruptions in those pre-treatment systems that have caused us to take a lot more load. But we'll take a look at that, and then there's in general, it's not the big reason, but there's in general about 0.75% growth in the population of this area year over year. So it's a little bit, but it's a combination of prices go up, and we may get more units to treat, which means we spend more money, but we also have more revenue coming in to cover it. So, but we'll get that information back to Sean.
Okay. Trustee Harrison, if I could jump in with a follow-up. So maybe it was the rate increase slide that showed, I think, the mill customers up 15% in that range, and the households were a lot lower. Is that in a reflection of what you just said about this? Whatever, their treatment thing, systems not being offline or whatever, and sending more stuff your way.
Or their production's up. The two mills, when we talk about mills, it's Procter & Gamble and Green Bay Packaging. Those are customers of the city of Green Bay, but we have a kind of special contractual relationship with them. And both of those mills are planning to give us, so we ask them every year, this is what you did last year, what do you plan to do next year? And both of them are planning to give us more loading, so it would say that their production is going up.
But you have the ability to recover if they send you a curveball during the current year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just like we do with our municipal customers, we bill them on their actual discharge. It's just we have to budget something to be able to set the rates.
Okay, thank you.
How has Alloy's numbers, how have our numbers been in terms of how much we send your way?
We'll have to get some details. You're a very low, have little or no industrial impact, so it will vary, primarily yours will vary on flow. Depends upon whether it rains a lot or groundwater's high. Your variation is typically on volume or flow. We just don't have the numbers right now for how you varied over the years, but we do have that.
Yeah, yeah. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Did you add some additional?
I just wondered, in terms of budget, what other municipalities do you give a presentation to? I don't think it's many. I was just curious.
It is not. This past year, we spoke to every municipality, not about budget, but about the facilities plan. Yeah. Typically, it's you and likely the village of Suamico. That's, we offer to all of our customers, and most of them find that we're not the biggest thing for them to deal with. But those are the, you and the village of Suamico typically take us up on it.
Just general curiosity.
Yeah.
And then, do you mind providing a quick overview for the board on the capital charge study and what's in store for us for 2024?
Yeah, so that will not go into effect until the 2024 budget. Currently, we have we obtained 65% of our capital through that capital charge. 35% of that capital then goes back into the rates and becomes kind of variable. You know, for example, if you had a high flow, we could, in a sense, over collect for this capital. We want to move that, and it will change for the 24 budget, to 100%. So 100% of our capital will come in through this fixed charge. It's then a consistent amount each month that's charged to the municipal customers. Another thing that has changed, this is where Tom may need to support me because I wasn't involved in those meetings, is a year-end a true-up that occurs, and I'll hand it off.
Yeah, so the plan is in 2024, we will budget for 100% of the capital. It'll come out of the rates and go in as a capital charge, and so you'll get it as 1/12. And it'll be administered to you as budgeted. At the end of the year, with our December invoice, which will be early January, we'll go back through and recalculate for all of our municipal customers how much you actually gave us and what your share of that capital in relation to everyone else should be. The total dollar amount collected from all customers won't change, but there could be some reallocation. So if in relation to other customers you gave us more than was budgeted, you would see an additional capital allocation. If in relation to other customers you gave us less than budgeted, there would be a credit that would come back to you. And we're going to do that over 12 months so that it doesn't become a hit in any one month. What we did see when we looked at 2018, 19, and 21 budget versus actual is that most of our customers were plus or minus 2 or 3%. The ones that there were some that were plus a lot and minus a lot, and it was directly due to industrial dischargers that gave either more or less than was budgeted. And if that municipality is monitoring the industries as they should, they will have collected that money, and if it needs to be paid back out to us, they should have it already in their coffers.
So if I'm understanding it correctly, in essence, each of the municipalities for this portion of it will be on the equivalent of a budget payment plan that you can have at your home for WPS. It gets adjusted after 6 months, after 12 months of what you have been paying, and then you adjust it for the following 12 months and continue to pay the same amount. Is that a relatively good comparison?
It might be. I'm not on that WPS budget payment plan, so I don't.
I understand.
What it's going to be is, let's say we need to collect $20 million for capital, and that's what we budget. And so we know our debt service. So we budget for $20 million worth of capital. When we go back through at the end of the year and look at what everyone's given us actual compared to budget, we're still going to collect $20 million. The distribution of that $20 million to our municipal customers may be a little bit different based on what you actually gave us. We did a working stakeholder advisory group over a period of about 8 or 9 months, and our customers felt that that was more equitable. You know, that if you use the system more, you paid more, and if you use the system less, you paid a little less. And then the thought was new water, what we've seen over the past 3 years, because flows or loads have been higher than budget, we've actually collected, from that 35% that's in the rates, we've actually collected more money than we need to pay our capital. What we've done is put it in that capital reserve, and it'll come back in this facilities plan project. But we don't need to collect more money, and we don't want to collect more money. So that's the process. I think it greatly simplifies it, and from what feedback we got from public works directors was that felt equitable, that if you used it, you paid for it. If you didn't use it, you paid a little less.
And then you said you'd be reimbursed. Let's say we paid in more money than we should have. We'd be reimbursed over the next 12 months?
Over the next 12 months. We'll divide it by 12, yeah.
And if we have paid less than we were supposed to, we would pay you spread out over 12 months?
We'd add it to your bill, your monthly bill, in a 1/12th increment over the next year.
That's how it makes it. Would that be a big hit if it's $20 million?
Yep.
And if everyone who... If both sides all paid or collected at the same time, how would that be a big hit to anyone's budget?
Well, we had, when we looked at for 18, 19, and 20, or I'm sorry, yeah, 18, 19, 20, we saw one municipality, and it was really because of an industry that could have paid another, it was almost 50% more.
That's what one of the things I was going to ask about. Howard is their 2020 is up $350,000, and their 2021 is up $411,000. But on the flip side, like you said, De Pere was down $493,000 and $444,000. So they wash each other out, but it's still a big chunk for each municipality, whether it's up or down.
Yeah. So. Typically, when it's that VOD and suspended solids, that's coming from an industry that maybe is having troubles with their pretreatment system. We work with municipalities to make sure that they are sampling those industries correctly. And if they're sampling them correctly, they should be getting additional revenue over that year to be able to pay it. Though the one challenge would be is on volume. If one community in a given year, if there was a lot of wet weather flow that came into one community, not another community, that could have a shift on.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Harris?
I'm just overlooking something obvious. On the listing of the customers, what is Sustana Fiber?
Sustana Fiber is...
Sustana, okay, pardon me.
Either way. They are, used to be Fox River Fiber. They're down in De Pere. They are a customer of the city of De Pere.
Okay.
But because there's such a large loading, we do keep track of them separately.
Understood.
They're not a...
Since you're here, no one's going to ask the question. Thank you.
Yeah. And wait a year and it'll be a different one.
Any other questions? Comments. We thank you both for being here.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Have a good evening. Moving on to item number 6, noise variance permit application for a block party to be held sometime in the summer of 2023. Number of people is unknown. The neighbors will be informed of the event. The event will take place from 1 to 7, and there will most probably be a band. This request is coming from Mr. Austin Baker, who lives on Green Valley and has recently moved to the area and would like to have an event, and is asking Jason to explain this to us.
Yes, like you said, a rather unique noise variance permit application across my desk. After speaking to Austin here on his vision of getting a GoFundMe page, and with that money collected would dictate the size of the band. In our previous discussions, I know he mentioned maybe going a little smaller now. It kind of went past the DJ wedding in the backyard and into more of the Doug's Take Five fundraiser band, even to go so large as Oktoberfest. And I know those places have come in and talked to the village board, and ultimately it needs village board approval. So with this block party band type thing, I invited Austin to kind of give his vision to the village board here for any comments, concerns, guidance in this vision. It's not approval tonight we're looking for. We just want everyone on board, so we're working on this. If, like Austin said, he wanted to get an early start on this and do the GoFundMe page, and how much he can raise kind of dictates the size of this event. So not knowing that, I thought it'd be best to talk to the village board. He can give his vision.
Sounds great.
Austin?
Welcome, Austin.
Good evening.
Welcome to Alloway.
Thank you.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Austin Baker, 721 Green Valley Avenue.
Thank you.
As my 4-year-old grandson would say, in the village of Owl Ooze. Owl Ooze, I get a kick out of that one. So, not a complicated vision. I'm new to the area. I love my neighborhood. I love my neighbors. Man, did my wife and I ever get lucky. And I had heard that they had done some block parties on Park Ridge in the past. So I got the harebrained idea to champion it and see if I can get something put together for this next summer. And they had said they'd never had a band, so I thought a band would be great, but the cost of paying for a band, like I first originally thought of Boogie and the Yo-Yos, but Vogel told me they're like $8,000, so yeah, that's not happening. But it takes time to rally some people up, and then whoever wants to donate to fund, because I don't want to pay for it all, the band. So, and we can even do just part, I'm super flexible. I mean, we can even just do part of Park Ridge. We don't have to have Green Valley and Park Ridge, which are two very small streets. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Doesn't have to be super late. He had the idea of pointing the speakers towards the river to piss off the least amount of neighbors. So, yeah.
Okay.
Any comments, concerns, questions, complaints?
The only concern I had was, I have no idea what the date is, nor do you, right? I thought we were being asked to approve this tonight. And I'm glad we're not, because it's hard to approve something we don't know what we're approving. But
all I was hoping for was an approval on whether I can have a band or not. I understand we could probably do a block party with, that's pretty easy to approve, right? Just a regular block party. But
that's
after
a whole other application, but yeah. Easy.
Okay. But my discussion with Vogel, we didn't know if we could get approved for a band in a block party that was in the neighborhood, not at Green Isle Park. So, and I don't know if you make a decision tonight, or if you email me, or you say, hey, Austin, get out of the building.
Well, like,
totally up to you.
Like the EO Vogel said, we can provide guidance. My personal opinion is, you don't need a huge band for a block party.
Correct. Right?
You can have a nice little small band and have a blast and still keep the noise contained.
I was going to ask a question either of fellow board members or staff. Have we had block parties with bands and noise waivers over the years?
To my knowledge, a band, no. The biggest for noise variance that's come across, other than Doug's Take Five or Oktoberfest.
Or maybe somebody with a wedding reception.
The DJ, wedding in the backyard DJ, is our biggest one that we've run across, other than those two other ones that come to mind. So a band at a block party in a neighborhood, figured we'd talk about it tonight, get some guidance.
Okay.
Well, I think the hours are a plus.
you know, since it's not going until 10, 11 or whatever. So, again, it's hard to react really without a little bit more information, but it certainly sounds like it could be fun, and if a lot of the neighbors are buying into the idea, that could help.
Yeah, I've got a good response from everybody I've talked to so far. And as far as a band, I contacted Fox City's party, Fox Valley Party. You can rent a 4x4 for $25, make it as big as you want. I want to put it in my side yard facing park, so maybe like a 12x12. It's really, really pretty small. Almost the same size as what a DJ would set up. So
yeah, I think the concern is the level of noise that...
Right, the amount of speakers and yeah. How loud and how crazy they get.
Yeah.
So.
And we will draw something up with Austin here, to just like I do with the letter here, to either approve or deny on my end and for your approval then. But with this having the chance of growing into something pretty big,
yep.
I wanted to invite Austin today.
So being your inaugural event, I would suggest trying not to blow it up, but to contain it and to make sure that you talk to all of your neighbors and find out not only those who agree with having it and who those, but find out those who don't and what their concerns might be.
Sure.
Just because, you know, I think it's great that you're new to the community, you're new to the neighborhood. I'm your neighbor, by the way. I love the fact that you're taking the initiative and taking the right steps to do it rather than just doing it. So I applaud you. Thank you.
Well, thanks. Well, and we do plan to keep it a little smaller. We're looking at a band called Wet Possum now that is a rock band that does 90s and 2000s. And they're a local Green Bay band. And one of my neighbors found them and he knows them. And, you know, I'm not talking thousands of people. This might be a couple hundred people.
It's your neighbors, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Trustee Harris.
To echo what Trustee Atwood said, I think it's a great idea that you're looking into this. It could be a lot of fun. One other thing to just keep in mind that depending on who gets what impression of what they can and cannot do, we've got to make sure that no one's, or you go through the proper process for someone to sell something. Just put that in the back of your head. I don't know if anybody would look at doing something like that, but that'd be some, you know, we just need to take that into account.
Absolutely. And we don't plan on having any vendors. We're not selling anything. It's all neighbors. I don't think there'll be snacks, lawn chairs.
And that's 100% fine. I'd rather bring it up.
Absolutely.
And make sure that everybody understands what could or could not happen from the start. That's
sure.
All.
Sure.
Bringing community together is a good thing.
And if it would get too big, maybe we brought up the idea of Greenout Park. It's a nice area. I don't know. We're in the process.
Well, it's definitely open for anybody who wants to straggle in. We're not going to be selling tickets or there's not a general administration. The only reason I was hoping to solicit some funds, whether it's to my wife's Vimo or Venmo or whatever that's called, or a GoFundMe page, just in help to help pay for the band, because I still have no idea even what Wet Possum costs. So.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
No, they don't seem to be.
Anything from you guys?
Great, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for me?
No, sir. We thank you very much for being here and being prepared. And any other comments?
Good luck on that whole water ordeal. That's a little over my head. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Water over the head, not a good thing. Thank you. Moving on to item number 7, action regarding TDS utility project, or locating of storm laterals. We have a memorandum of understanding and an updated memorandum of understanding that we just received half hour before the meeting. Sean, I'll turn it over to you.
Sure. I think before we start, before we begin discussions of the MOU that was provided to you in your packet and has since been revised. I think give you a little bit of background information on what has taken place. This summer, as you know, TDS had started to install broadband fiber optics throughout the village with an overall goal of installing broadband to every home in Alloway. They got started with three projects that we had, with the help of MC, we had approved three permits. At the beginning of the project, we were up front with TDS, the difficulty of marking and locating storm laterals in the village of Alloway. We didn't have reliable records. We didn't have records such that we could give to a locator to go out and mark. What we had was a line on a map or on a record or a permit. And because of that, the locator that we had hired wasn't locating these lines in the field because they didn't want to take on the liability. It wasn't tied to a known point. So we had expressed that concern to TDS up front. We said, we're going to rely on you to do your best to locate these in the field. Project got started, and end of July or early August, we started to receive a high volume of phone calls from concerned residents that they have a lateral, it wasn't located, no efforts were being made in the field to pothole or to try to locate or to avoid. And they were concerned that their lateral may have been compromised with the installation of the broadband. There were a couple laterals that were hit. I don't know the exact number. I think TDS indicates that there were two. To their credit, as soon as we found out that the laterals were hit, they were out there, their contractor made the repair. There's been a lot of discussion. This discussion has started August 3rd. On August 3rd, we had a weekly TDS meeting. We voiced our concern because of the high volume of phone calls that we were receiving, that there had to be more done in the field to try to locate these unlocatable laterals. Something had to be done. We voiced our concern that at that point. I reinforced that with an email to TDS. Hey, we're getting a lot of phone calls, of which we were handing off to TDS, and they were responding to the concerned residents. On the 11th, we met in the field with TDS and their contractor. Unfortunately, that didn't result in any changes to their construction method. September 1st, we met with TDS. With TDS and their contractor, we said, "Hey, we need to find a solution to this problem. Please talk about it internally. What can you do? Can you televise? Can you use ground penetrating radar? Are there best management practices that you can use to minimize impacts?" And then we met again on the 15th with Josh from TDS, and then on the 23rd we met again. And Josh was able to present to the village some best management practices that could be utilized to prevent conflict or impacts to one lateral. And through that discussion, those best management practices included will raise up the depth of the conduit from 36 inches to 18. Our storm laterals are anywhere from 18 to 4 feet deep. They vary in depth. But by bringing up their facility, we can hopefully avoid conflict with the majority of laterals. Two, they indicated that they would strategically locate bore pits to align with where one sub pump had discharged out of their house, where it was known from the street that their sub pump drained into a lateral, to strategically place that to try to uncover, to locate that lateral, to avoid it. And then a commitment, indicated a commitment to the village to provide a warranty and timely repair of any compromised laterals at TDS cost. At the end of this discussion, and there were a number of us present that included village attorney, she had indicated at the end that she wanted to an MOU drafted, an official agreement drafted. Friday we had received, I know Josh, you were out of town, your attorney was working on that document. We had received the MOU on Friday. I had stopped whatever I was working on to make that a priority review, a staff review, and provided comments to Christina. And this afternoon, actually this evening, we had received her red line, or actually completed agreement. So we haven't had a whole lot of time to review it. I think what we presented in the board documents, as you said, meets the spirit of what we've discussed. I haven't compared the two. You want to talk a little bit about the agreement?
So just a few comments and then talk about the agreement. This is not an uncommon problem across the state of Wisconsin. So in the 35 communities that we're doing in construction in today, we do not locate laterals. If we hit them, we don't want to hit them. It drives additional cost to TDS, but cities all across Wisconsin have laterals that are not locatable, either because there's no records or because the materials that they're actually physically made out of can't be located. So this is a problem that we work through everywhere we go. I'll say, regardless of the terms of the agreement, and I've not looked at the attorney's red lines, and our attorney obviously still needs to prove them, if this agreement did not exist, everything that we were going to be doing in the field and our commitment to fix what we hit is what we'd be doing anyway. So regardless of this agreement, even if we constructed, we'd still be going out, making these bore pits, strategically locating them. We're collaborating with the residents. If they happen to know where their facilities are located, we can, you know, add an extra pit and dig it up to see if we can find it. And then, of course, if we hit anything, we would fix it. So we do that in every community in the state of Wisconsin. When we hit laterals, we fix them. We also fix sprinklers and dog fences that are located in the right-of-way that are actually technically classified as improperly located in the right-of-way because they're not supposed to be there. If we hit them, we fix them. So I think this is more just memorializing the collaboration we've had with city staff. To his point, there are some terms in here that has not necessarily been reviewed on the TDS side yet, but the spirit of this agreement is we want to collaborate as closely with city residents and put some best practices in the field to try to mitigate these hits. To date, we're about 20% complete with this project, and we've hit two. So extrapolate, we're going to hit 10 to 12. We've got about 8 or 10 more that we're probably going to hit throughout the course of the project. We will fix them. I think raising up, as Sean said, the depth to 18 inches will help mitigate those. The strikes that we had of the two that were hit were at 24 inches. So raising it up should help a little bit. I'm here to answer any questions. I know Trustee Harris has sat in on all these conversations. It's a pretty complex issue, so we can go as deep down the rabbit hole as you want as far as construction or engineering of our network and why we're having this issue, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Have you halted work because of this? So
since the two strikes, I believe permits have been suspended, correct?
I did. Suspended work on the 11th. I'm not going to make my notes. It was early in August that I suspended the work because of the high volume of calls that we had received and our concern.
Okay. Trustee Harris, anything to add?
No. Nothing other than when we sat in on when I sat in on the meetings, certain parts of it operationally are way over my head, but the spirit of the agreement, as Josh said, is to make sure that things are taken care of properly. We want to be able to give the residents a understanding of what is taking place, if there is a problem, how it can be solved, and that we are going out of our way to work with TDS is going out of their way to try the best they can. We don't expect or residents won't want, we're not asking TDS to go onto private property. This has to do with area that's out the right of way, but trying to get a better understanding visually at times, where is the lateral coming out? Sometimes that can happen, sometimes it can't, but we're on track now, I think, to make sure that we're taking care of as much as we can. Will this solve 100% of the problems? No, I don't know if there's a way. I know there's no way to solve 100%.
That's a great point. No matter what we put in this agreement, when this project continues, we will hit some of these. Like, just to be as transparent as possible, there's nothing we can put in place or paper that's going to 100% eliminate the risk of hitting these levels.
If I can add one other thing, just so that the rest of the board knows it, it's part of the agreement, but I believe it's something that Josh said to us during the meeting. They will be looking back. They've had instances 2-3 years down the road that they've been in a municipality. Something happened. They've gone back to fix it. I believe we're spelling it out in this one. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean. They're guaranteeing at least a year on the contract from the last date of work in the village. So something may have happened in June as part of the first 20%. Clock doesn't start even on that stuff until the day the last amount of work finishes in the village. Did I get that right?
That's correct, yeah. So our contractor is under contract with us from a year from when construction ends. So if we end construction at the end of, just say, 2023, they're on the hook till the end of 2024. And then to Trustee Harris's point, you know, we got a call last week, shared with him from the village of Rothschild up in the Wausau region. We built that back in 2019, and they found a piece of our orange conduit running right through one of their pipes, and we sent someone up there and fixed it immediately. So regardless of the one-year warranty, 3, 4, 5 years from now, our orange pipe is going through one of the resident sump pumps, or even another piece of critical infrastructure, storm, what have it, we're going to stand behind our work, and we're going to fix that, no matter what the timing is on that.
Hey, Josh.
Yeah.
Our warranty is a 5-year warranty period. On all of our major utility permits, we require a 5-year warranty. That's good to hear.
Yep.
And that was a comment that I provided to our village attorney that needs to get corrected to 5.
And that's fine. I mean, that's, again, if our pipe is going through it, it's easily demonstrated that it was our fault. We're going to fix that, whether it's 5 or 10 years down the road, or whenever it's discovered.
Trustee Sampson.
Quick question, information for the uninformed, but what's the heartache for somebody when their sump pump line gets cut? Is it that their sump pump won't empty, or is it they might get erosion up by the curb because it's pouring into? What's the biggest headache for those people who have this happen?
Probably a basement backup.
Basement backup.
If not a basement backup, then they would notice a sinkhole in their front yard, side yard, potentially. Okay.
And complicating is you won't know right away,
right,
until there's a big event, rain or
right,
whatever. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I think the good news here, and I shared this with village staff last time, if you look at the timeline from when these two hits that we were made aware of happened and repaired, I believe the following weekend it rained 3 inches here. So if we had any other issues, hypothetically, in the 20% of the village that's complete, we probably would have heard about it then, because that's quite a bit of rain in a short period of time.
Any other questions? Comments? Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
So we're being asked to approve the memorandum of understanding. I will accept the motion on this item.
Oh,
Brad?
Just kind of looking through it, from my interpretation, just my interpretation, Christina kind of spells things out a little bit more than what was originally put forward, and she did add paragraph number 3, or bullet point number 3, just again more of a clarification aspect. F is a total new version, and that we would want to change that to a 5-year. So I would, for the sake of things moving forward, if a motion from the board with these, changing that to a 5-year in the acceptance of TDS with minimal changes, or work within staff and our attorney on any changes, that as long as the makeup of the MOU stays in place, which I think it will. I think it really hasn't changed from what was drafted by TDS attorney. It's just more clarification in Christina's version.
Well, I think that
we could approve subject to
major
changes.
I think I hear what you're saying. So, President Rapper, I'd make a motion to approve it upon final approval between TDS's and the village's attorneys. If they both agree on it, then it can just move forward.
I have a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Genrich. I'll start the discussion. I'm not comfortable just because I very briefly read it. And not that I'm opposed to anything, but I see terminology in here where attorneys may not agree, and I don't know how many times they'll go back and forth, and I don't know what will change in those discussions. And because I put my signature on this, or the Village of Alloway puts their signature on it, I need to know what we're signing before we sign it. Yes?
No matter what, because there are red lines from the village attorney, the TDS attorney has not reviewed those red lines from the village attorney, it would still need to come back to the board for a final signature on the 18th at the soonest. What we might consider as an alternate motion would be, because again, in general, I think we're moving along in the right path, that there are three, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, three permits that are in place to be approved. We wouldn't go any further than that until the agreement is formally signed, but it allows those three to go forward. I don't know what percentage that represents. If another three permits would allow us to get from 20 to 30, or if three permits get us from 20 to 50, if each one's about 10% of the village. Just, I'm trying to figure out something that allows the process to continue to move forward, because I think both parties are working in good faith with each other.
The board didn't suspend the permits, right? So if staff decides to unsuspend the permits, conditional on us getting this at the next meeting. If things continue, if you feel comfortable, you pulled the permits, you can reissue them, right?
I initially had approved three. There are three that have been reviewed and are ready for my approval. To answer your question, they were proposing 12 BFMs, 12 projects, so they've completed three. If I approve three more, we'd go from 25 to 50%. I feel comfortable with that.
Wait 1 second, Josh.
We can bring this back on the 18th. We can go ahead and approve the permits. They can get started. We can be out in the field to monitor closely and make sure that they're doing as suggested by the MOU and as discussed on the 23rd, and if we see any deviation from that, I could help work again.
And from what I hear, there's not going to be a concern, but we just have to go through the right steps, in my opinion,
okay,
to get it done. Josh, come on up.
Just going to add, as far as the risk and perspective, the type of construction that Quanta does in the village is a missile bore, and we've got about 4 to 6 weeks left of weather to do that type of construction. So approving permits tonight and, so to speak, the risk of us getting too far over our skis, we're not going to get much done. Like, those three DFN permits will not be complete this year. So by the time they get started again a few weeks from now, construction is going to be done because of the weather.
Okay, so us approving this really doesn't make any difference tonight.
It does, because we would like to obviously take advantage of the last few weeks that we have in this year that we can work. If staff is comfortable and the board is comfortable with continuing where we're at today, we would very much like to get started in the next few days again.
So my solution is okay then, correct?
Correct.
I mean, if they were to reissue the permits and no longer have them in a suspended state, we don't have to sign this today as long as staff oversees everything.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
I thought of that. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to make a substitute motion to not take action on this item this evening and allow staff to deal with the practicality of running the business, and we'll get this back on the 18th when everyone's reviewed it. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion on this? We have a motion to not take action on this item, and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thanks, Josh. Thanks for being here. Item number 8, regarding HydroCorp residential proposal for cross-connection control services.
With Kevin Wyland's resignation, came a loss of experience, training, and certification in cross-connection. Because of that, I had reached out to a contractor to provide that service. Residential cross-connection control inspection. They have provided an agreement. You should note that they provide commercial inspection. They provided a one-year agreement, 300 inspections at a cost of $18,600. Services include the scheduling of the inspections, inspection and proper documentation, DNR reporting, and then if need be, if we don't have availability to go out and do a re-inspection or a compliance inspection. But I had talked to Trevor about this. The person that was recently hired doesn't have this experience. I'll talk to him again next year at this time to find out if that's something that he would want that new person to take on, because they, in the past, Kevin had helped the water department. So tonight I'm looking to get village board approval to move ahead with this agreement for next year.
How many cross connections did we inspect over the last year, or normally in a year?
Well, it was 300.
Is it the 300?
Yeah.
Same number?
Unfortunately, due to COVID, that number had come down, so we'll have to try to make up a few inspections over the course of the next, well, we have a 20-year period to inspect every residential home in Alloway, so we have some time. I believe we have to meet this DNR mandate by 2035.
Excuse me. How are our residents notified that they're up for a cross-connection inspection?
I believe it's a letter that's sent out.
Okay. Did someone have a question?
Oh. I do. Just bring it up. With that expense of $18,000, and we've got until 2035 to have everything inspected by that date?
All of the properties in Alabama.
So this... excuse me. So this new individual that we hired, would they be willing to go through the process of being certified?
I don't know.
We had the discussion with them, and I believe so.
Okay. Do we know what the cost is to have that that certification done?
I don't right offhand. I'm sorry.
I would almost be in favor of looking into that, if, as long as we have another 12 years, roughly.
That only covers 300, right? This $18,000 only covers 300.
Right, this is just a one-year contract for next year.
Okay. Do those 300 have to be done next year?
To stay on schedule, yes. We're already behind because of COVID.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
So in a sense, we could do both and do the 300 and then see if we can train the
new company. Yeah, it will take some time to get that person trained, but do the classwork and get certified.
I see that we would be charged if a resident refuses on-site inspection. It'll count as an inspection, one of the 300.
I did talk to them about that. I don't know that happens very often. We've got a really good working relationship with HydroCorp. As mentioned earlier, they provide the service for commercial properties, which are a lot more sophisticated when it comes to plumbing review. Mm-hmm. They'll work. I would be hopeful that they would continue to work with us as they have on the commercial inspection. So their goal would be to get done, to complete 300. We have the capability to assist too, in the event that we have to perform a re-inspection of a home that was inspected to find that was found non-compliant. We can go in and help with that. And we've indicated that the HydroCorp to cut down the cost.
I just think if they're going to send a letter to residents, when do they find out if they're being rejected? When they show up.
What they have done, because I had mine inspected by HydroCorp a few years ago, was I had a letter to set up a time, and so that's what I did. I set up my time. So from my understanding is if they sent a letter and they do not get a response, if it's send a follow-up letter to the residents stating that this is a requirement, needs to be done, please reach out to us to schedule a time. I think they do it up to three times, and then they're not just going to show up at that resident's house. So to get that charge, I would agree that doesn't really make sense, because I could see if they showed up and if they went to a home with anticipation to do the cross-connection inspection, and the person wasn't there. It's a little different scenario.
Yeah, that's a no-show in there. So that's a scheduled no-show. Right. I find it surprising that if someone says no, we get charged. Last question I have is 4.4 refers to a one-year contract period totaling $18,600 or $1,550 a month. But in 4.1, it says, beginning, this contract commences on November 1st and ends 14 months from such date. Mm-hmm. Why do we have 14 months versus 12?
I'd like to get them started as soon as possible.
I get that. Why the 14 months versus the 12 month? It says a one-year contract. I'm just wondering, is that...
Yeah, I could have that revised. I had initially, because we were behind this year with Kevin's resignation, I had asked that they try to complete some inspections this year to count towards the number of inspections this year, our goal this year, 300.
So are they, I guess my question is the value of the contract $18,600 flat, or is it $1,550 times 14?
It's a one-year contract totaling $18,600.
Okay. So we're, in theory, getting 14 months for the cost of 12.
No, we're getting 300 inspections.
Okay.
Over a 14-month period?
Yes.
Okay. I just think it should be clear. Well, perform pursuant. Okay.
You know what? I can get that cleaned up, and I can bring this back. If you guys would feel more comfortable about that, there really is no sense of urgency right now, because we're not it's unlikely that we're going to be able to complete any inspections this year. I have time. We can clean up that language.
Okay. I'm not opposed to the whole concept. I just think that should be clarified.
I don't have a problem. As long as we can get this approved middle of November, their contract would start in January, but their work would start in December to start to line up these inspections for January.
Okay. Sounds good.
I wonder if that's why they had done that. That's probably why.
If they want to start November 1st and charge us for 12 months.
Well, maybe it takes time for them to send out the letters.
It does. Why they had done that. Yeah.
President Rector,
one yes, sir.
Other item to review, I think, would be on Section 4.2, because it's listed out as a two-year agreement, so we should get that clarified as well, I think.
Where is that at?
4.2.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know if we're anticipating renewing, and if so, maybe we put out that it should be, 30 days notice, 60 days notice. I wouldn't go any longer than 60, but just that amount of time that each party gives the other to renew or expire.
Yes, striking the word automatically renewing, self-renewing in that same section.
Written notice, maybe those wordings.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, does the option to
We have the option to renew with 30, 60 day notice, whatever it might be.
Get rid of that automatically. Yeah, it doesn't.
Okay. So I will make a motion to table this till it comes back. Yeah. I have a second. Trustee Sampson, any discussion?
Real quick, when it comes back, can we get what the cost of schooling or whatever that would be to, and how long that would take just to plan for the following year?
Sure.
Good point. Any other discussion? We have a motion to table this item in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 9, Amendment number 2 of Libel Street Engineering Agreement. Sean. Is the one that was on the desk tonight, is that different than the one we had in our packet?
No difference in cost, but there were some slight changes to the scope. Okay. This amendment, we had started working on after approval of the first amendment, which was approved on the 6th of September, early last month. Again, this is a three-party agreement between the village, DOT, and Strand. This process starts with the village, and then the DOT will take it to their staff. I've already worked through this with Strand and DOT local program manager, but they take it, the DOT local program manager takes it to another level, and they ultimately review it. But it starts here with the village. The reason for this amendment is to redesign storm sewer between Mission and Alloway Avenue. During the design of that storm sewer, during the sizing of that storm sewer, it was determined that the existing storm sewer, which is a 12-inch pipe, is severely undersized based on their hydrology calculations. I ran my own calculations using a different method. I had agreed that it was undersized, but not to the extent that they were proposing. I talked to Brad. I talked to residents on Libel Street to find out if we had a history of flooding in that location. No. One of the residents just happened to be the Deputy Director of Public Works for the City of Green Bay. And the system they were proposing was larger than the downstream receiving system on Mission Road. that extends to East River Drive. And I just voiced my concern that with the oversizing of that pipe comes larger manholes, and it's going to be more expensive to construct and maintain. And they were fairly set on their sizing calculations, and ultimately, in the end, I had read a memorandum directing them to install a certain size pipe, one that could be accommodated out there based on the conditions. So this amendment includes that initial work by Strand staff to redesign that segment of storm sewer. It also incorporates, McMahon was hired to review the condition of the existing cross culvert just south of Optimus Park. Their contract had also included, if need be, the replacement of that culvert pipe. And I had pulled that from Strand's original contract because of McMahon's thorough knowledge of the village's stormwater management. They were more capable of, better suited to size that culvert pipe if it had to be replaced. So this amendment includes the incorporation of McMahon's construction details, line work, and bid items into Strand's plan set. It also includes, this amendment includes, because of the replacement of that culvert pipe, there may be some wetland impacts associated with that work. It includes identifying wetland impacts and, if so, the proper reporting of that. This amendment also includes the drafting of the storm laterals, proposed storm laterals from 172 to Alloway Avenue. We're going to be reconstructing that segment of roadway, and when we reconstruct the roadway, we look to renew and/or install the laterals. So this includes the drafting of storm laterals. The first amendment had included a portion of that too, but this includes preparing a construction detail for the storm lateral connection to the main, and preparing contract special provisions for that work, storm lateral and connected. The dollar amount for this amendment is $14,218.43. It will bring the engineering agreement cost from $590,000 and change to just over $600,000. As mentioned to you, in September, we had received a transportation flood grant that provides us funding for design and construction to 80-20% cost sharing, 80% fed and state, 20% village. To keep this project moving forward, I'm hoping that we can get this approved tonight and we can continue with the design project. With approval, I've been told that we should be receiving 60% plans by end of next week or early the following, of which at some point then I'll bring those plans to the village board, along with the comments that we've received at public informational meetings.
So the cost hasn't changed between these two? No. It's just the scope?
Some slight changes to the scope.
Okay, and you're comfortable with
yes.
Everything in that document?
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? I will accept the motion on the second.
I'll move to approve amendment number 2, Reliable Street Engineering Agreement as presented.
Trustee Genrich, do I have a second? Trustee Deutsch, any discussion? Matthew.
So, Sean, I'm just going back and forth between the two documents. So everything that's, because there's a handful of things that are added, you know, whether it's item D and M, 14 and 18, we deleted a little part in 15. All those changes you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Some of the wording, again, it's outside of my knowledge. I just in terms of what I can understand, I just want to make sure you're comfortable with all these changes.
Yeah.
From what we had in our original packet. That's what I want to confirm.
Yeah, we went through that in a lot of detail Friday and today.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve amendment number 2 to the contract between Alloway and Wisconsin Department of Transportation and Strand Associates, and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 10, action regarding vendor permit for Twas the Night Before Christmas Craft Boutique at Green Isle Park Pavilion on November 5th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is a recurring event. It's the 45th annual. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Deutsch, do I have a second? Trustee Sampson, any discussion? We have a motion to approve the permit for Twas the Night Before Christmas and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 11. We'll take A through C on the consent agenda. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Deutsch, what would you like? Would you like to approve that?
Approve.
Okay. Do I have a second? Not to put words in your mouth, Trustee Deutsch.
I'll say.
Trustee Genrich, we have a motion to approve the consent agenda. And a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 12. Is there anything a fellow trustee would like to see on a future agenda item? Hearing none, we'll move on from number 12 and move on to number 13. I will accept the motion to convene in the closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating and purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, for conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, specifically a developer's agreement.
So moved under 1985.
Trustee Sampson, welcome back. Do I have a second? Trustee Deutsch, roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
Trustee Deutsch.
Aye.
Thank you. We are enclosed. Motion passes. Thank you. We are back in open session, and we have nothing to report on, so I will accept the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Harris. Any discussion? We have a motion to adjourn and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. I thank you, and good night.
Good night.